On the podcast today, we're going to speak about whether karma is a moral principle or a naturalistic principle, and also its relationship to moksha, liberation, release in Sanskrit. And so when most people think about karma, they often think about cause and effect. You reap what you sow, and there's little bits of truth to that. But karma itself comes from the Sanskrit root kri, which means action, and even that can be vague for some people. But a lot of people confuse karma with whether it's a moral principle as opposed to a natural principle, which we will speak about today.
Yes, karma is actually a very popular term among a lot of people because of that sort of definition that people think of, like, yes, that you reap what you sow, the cause and effect and whatnot. But I think that's very physical, very surface level of understanding.
Yes.
And more so to judge what's moral and what's not moral, right? Mm. And I think that meaning of karma can change by your own morality and cultural indoctrination as well.
Mm.
But obviously karma, the word, actually come from the Vedanta, the Bhagavad Gita. And that's what we need to clarify here, where actually the word karma came from.
Yes. And so in the Bhagavad Gita, you do have nishkarma karma, right? So where Krishna is explaining to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra that you cannot be attached to the fruits of your own action. Like, because Arjuna is doubting himself because he has to go into battle against his cousins. And so he's obviously confused about this and he doesn't want to do this, obviously. But Krishna is kind of explaining to him that this is his dharma in life, right? This is his dharma. And in following your dharma, then that kind of regulates your karma when you're not overly thinking about the actions that you are doing, right?
Yes.
And so we often fall into guilt and all of the shame and all of these things because we actually believe too much in the sense of a moralistic version of karma, right? And so getting back to like what you were saying earlier about karma, I remember growing up in Australia, we actually talk about karma in that sense of just only cause and effect. And actually in growing up, words like karma and guru, you actually don't even know are Sanskrit words because they've become so much a part of the English language.
Yes.
That you think it's actually an English word. And then you don't understand the root of it. So when we look at, as you said, the Bhagavad Gita, you've got this story of where Krishna is explaining to Arjuna, he just has to fulfill his duty, but not be attached to the fruits of his own action. And that actually is a spiritual practice, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yeah, I think the meaning of word karma has been warped by a lot of different ideas. But again, we'd like to clarify what really karma means. And again, as you mentioned earlier, karma literally means just an action. And there's many different kinds of karma as well, according to Vedanta, like nishkam karma and prarabdha karma and whatnot. So it's ultimately the karma, as in practice, they call it karma yoga, as in practice is to reach moksha, the liberated state of mind.
Exactly. And so we'll get into that a little bit further on. But let's have a look at karma in the sense of whether it's a moral principle or a natural principle. So a lot of people will talk about good or bad karma, right? So my karma is good or bad. And then you say, but that perspective of bad karma, if you take that to another culture, that would be good karma. So how do you determine whether karma is good or bad? And this is where you pull the rug from underneath the moral aspect of karma, because people often confuse karma, as we said, with cause and effect. And so then you superimpose the idea of reward and punishment onto karma. And this especially has happened since the concept of karma has gone into other parts of the world that have monotheistic religions. So you have a monarchical view of the god who tells you you're good or bad. It's basically based on your own perspective of what that god is, really, within yourself. Some people don't, they might follow the same religion, but they don't have such a solid view of sin, for example, and so they are more free to do what they want without ever thinking about whether this karma is good or bad, right? And so that's one of the problems that has happened to karma once it went out off the shores of India. It became this big thing of, you know, good karma, bad karma. You know, I'm accruing, you see a lot within Buddhist circles of, oh, I'm accruing some good karma for my next life. And then to a yogi or a sadhu, they're like, what next life? Like this, you need to live in the now and become a jivan mukta, which we'll talk about a bit later, someone who's liberated in this life. But you often see this, right, in Buddhist circles, that, hey, I'm just accruing some good karma for my next life. And so you're already thinking about your jiva, your persona system, in its next incarnation.
Again, that's still coming from the idea of reward and punishment way of thinking, exactly. Isn't it?
Yep.
I think it almost feels like they just want to use the word karma for their own convenience. Mm. But the understanding of it is completely the other way around, completely untrue to what really karma means traditionally, yes. Originally. And they just project their monarchical view of the universe as if someone is watching you all the time and you need to act morally and ethically and whatnot, and as if that moral and ethics are like absolute. It always applies the same no matter where you are, what time that you live in and whatnot.
Yes.
Whereas those things always change, as we all know. Mm. What was right, let's say 50 years ago, may not be seen right today, right?
Yes.
This happens all the time. But we like to apply things like that too much of an absolute way, so that this kind of reward and punishment concept is still kind of carrying on. No matter if anyone thinks they're not Christian and whatnot, but that indoctrination is so deep in our society and the culture,
yep.
So that way of thinking is very ingrained in our own subconscious almost.
Yep.
So that I'm doing good deeds for my karma and this and that. This is still come from a reward and punishment way of thinking, unknowingly.
Mm.
Again, that is originally come from the monarchical view of universe, the God or Lord watching over you and to judge you whether you are doing good or not, or you making sins for yourself or not. I mean, we know that's absurd.
Well, I like what you said about the moral flavors of the time changing, right? So 50 years ago is different than the version of morality in 2023, right? And so what does karma do? Does karma just lucidly change between whatever we believe is right in that time? And then, as you said, we base our concept of sin and guilt and shame and everything like that on whatever the morality is of that point in time, right? And so the problem here is that a lot of people don't think about is it's the belief in this new morality that's the problem. And so you're thinking that you're accruing bad karma because the moral landscape has changed, as it was different in 50 years ago. And look, things do need to change, but karma does not relate to that, because as we will talk about, karma is a natural principle. And so it's your belief that karma is changing according to whatever the culture determines. And as I mentioned earlier, whose culture is right? And so this is where the great yogis and Zhuangzi and Lao Tzu and everyone would sort of walk in and say, there is no real definite right and wrong. You're determining that for yourself. It's your belief in that determines whether you have guilt or shame or this and that. Leave karma out of the conversation, because you're doing it to yourself.
Yes.
It's not that you're believing in whatever the world's telling you is or you ought to believe. And then you're determining whether you are going to have good karma or bad karma. Like you said, with how I mentioned with the Buddhist practitioners who often think they're accruing merit to get good karma in the next life. And think about that, though. What do you mean by good karma in the next life? Is that having a Lamborghini? Is that being born into a billionaire's family? What is the concept of good karma? And the way that we've had it explained to us in India, that even if you have an idea of, say, a future life, good karma, right, is to be born into a family of a yogi. So you're in a yogi family, and that's very beneficial. And this is a point that we're going to get to. So then, is karma related then to moksha, or is it related to living a fancy life? You know, and so a lot of people think it's living a fancy life, right? Like karma is about gearing me towards my next life. I'm going to be very prosperous. And it's like, well, karma could care less if you have money or you don't have money. It's about how you are within. It's not about what's going on in the externality of your life.
Again, from that place, you're still thinking of good or bad way of thinking, right?
Yeah.
Again, there's having a good karma, meaning that I want to be a good person, basically. And I don't want to be perceived as a bad person. Things like, again, very self-interested and self-image-oriented way of thinking.
Mm.
So in that way, we can't really say that's like a classical sense of karma at all, really.
No, it's not. It's, as you said, it's geared towards self-interest. It's geared towards the jiva, the persona system. Yeah. I want a good life next in my next life. Who wants the good life? The jiva, you are the Atman. You are the undifferentiated consciousness. That's what you truly are. And from that place, karma doesn't exist.
Mm.
And that's what a lot of practitioners don't understand, because they're just trying to purify their persona to a point where I want to accrue that good merit and I want to have a good next life.
Mm.
And then you're bringing in this concept of good and bad, and then someone comes along and says, good and bad according to who? If Zhuangzi walked in the room, right? Good and bad according to who? And then there's no real way to explain that. The Christians may say good and bad according to Jesus. The liberals may say good and bad according to their own ideology, so forth and so on, right? And there's no end to that.
Mm.
And so when you understand there is no good and bad because there is no authority that determines karma, then you're on the right track.
Yes. Yeah, so fundamentally, karma is a natural principle, intrinsic principle. You had this example in one of the videos based on karma, topic of karma, was that there's a person who are walking in the jungle for days and days and days and hadn't had any food or water and whatnot. And obviously, this person has to take some sort of action in order to survive.
Yep.
And the first thing would be like fetch some water and also maybe go for a hunting, right? So in that situation, is it appropriate to get into killing an animal? Is it moralistic or not? Or, that sort of debate? Or is it more appropriate and natural in that kind of situation to just hunt some sort of animal? And obviously you'd be very grateful that you had the food,
yep,
and you nourish yourself with some good quality meat, right? In that situation, what is more natural? Like, so you say something really important about this intention. Karma is a natural principle that is coming from right intention, appropriate intention.
Yes.
So in action, so that is
yes,
your internal action. Yes. So in action, but in actual physical action,
yeah,
which is you can translate as an intention.
Yes.
So was your intention was just to kill an animal just for fun, or you had to because of the circumstance, you need to live.
Exactly, right? Exactly. So karma is a natural principle, right? And Hindus understand this. This might not be understood well outside of India, but that natural impulse, like if we're related to Menchus, right, with the child in the well story, before the child goes to fall in the well, our natural impulse is to just save that child no matter what the circumstance is. Likewise, with survival in the forest, that explanation you said, your impulse is to just survive. The moralistic debates of whether eating meat is good or bad has been thrown out the window. You've pushed that to the side because your survival is imperative in that moment. And look, that may get a lot of vegans angry if they're listening and watching, but you need to look at this transparently. You need to look at this objectively. If you were stuck in a forest and this is your situation, there's only one animal and there's you, what are the odds that that animal is going to end up on your dinner plate? It's pretty high, right?
Yes.
And there's nothing right or wrong about that. It's just about the intention to survive.
Yes.
And so that's what karma is. Karma is about that intention and those purified actions guided towards ultimately moksha.
Yes.
For all of us, right? Mm. even though, okay, if we look at it from an Advaita Vedanta angle, we're all liberated and free right now, but most of us don't know that, and our jiva needs some time to work out its own karma, its own prarabdha karma, its own predestined past life karma.
Yeah.
And so that takes a little bit of time for us to work out before we can then step up onto the ultimate level of an avaduta or a jivan mukta. And so you don't want to turn – see, again, people will say, look at the forest story, and if they're really moralistic geared, if they're like a social justice warrior, they won't be able to understand that story, even though it's pretty plain and clear. You just need to survive. The intention in that moment is to survive, and the sense of morality has disappeared. And again, morality according to who? Because are you going to go around the world and demonize meat eaters? People aren't a devil for eating meat. That's a really new phenomenon.
Look, like we as a human species, the critical time of our evolution was when we were hunters and gatherers.
Yes.
We were living literally in savannas, and we had to hunt and gather food and whatnot, right? Mm-hmm. And especially going through that, those many, many, many years that we have developed internal organs like brain and things like that, so that played the critical part of our human evolution. So when you look at like that, like is a moralistic debate is something to be, you know, done or not really? You know, what is appropriate? It is again the natural law, natural principle, right? So that was what had to happen. That was what was appropriate for human evolution, so to speak.
Your biology doesn't care about what's moralistic. So the biology that we all have this in this day and age is exactly what you said, is due to an evolution of eating animal products, eating meat, which allowed us to develop the brain size that we have.
Mm.
That's a fact. If you don't understand that, study anthropology. That's just the way we evolved. And so everything that we have now, the opportunities that we have now to converse on the internet and do all this through YouTube and whatnot, is due to that whole process of evolution. They never thought about what was moralistic. Those ideas come into a culture that have everything taken care of, and then they forget their moral their internal moral imperative, and then they depend on external moral imperatives to tell you how to think and how to be.
Yes.
Hey, eating meat is bad. People who eat meat is bad. Both are false. And so it's about having the objectivity, and it doesn't matter if you want to choose to be a vegetarian or a vegan or whatever, they're your own personal choices. But obviously in Eastern philosophy, you are not supposed to push your own agenda onto others.
Mm.
And so everyone's own personal choices in life are their personal choices for them. It's not for you to go and tell them and channel your own inner tyrant and tell them how to think and how to be. And so if you do that, then you could say then that you might accrue negative karma, because things in your life won't pan out according to B. You'll come across conflict all the time because you're not leaving people alone to live as they will. You're not practicing Uwe. You're not practicing non-interference. And so the only way to follow the path is to practice non-interference, because that opens the valley up, the cosmic valley, and the path presents itself on the way to liberation.
Mm. Yes, that's a huge difference in Eastern philosophy over Western way of thinking.
Yep.
Because in Eastern philosophy, say you already are part of this universe. You are connected to the ultimate. So that your pure nature is innately good, like mentioned said about the well and the kid child story. So following that is producing appropriate action.
Mm.
That is karma, really.
Yep.
So that way of thinking, it doesn't come with the obviously reward and punishment.
Mm.
You just act according to your innate good nature, so that when you can act from that place, that action will always be appropriate.
Yes.
Under the certain circumstance. Just like a Arjuna Krishna story.
Yeah, when there's no jiva there or no ego, the way that you function actually is immediate and appropriate to each and every situation. There is no external moral principle determining how you act. The intention is purified. So you're acting according to the changing circumstances of life. And life is a bunch of transformations. And the transformations continue to change. And then from a spiritual perspective, you need to master that change. And so to master that change, you need to become natural again, right? And this is part of the principle of karma, about channeling that natural principle, that of acting without thinking about what are the results of my action. Mm. You're acting without a sense of agenda, a sense of morality, but you're acting immediately and appropriately to each and every situation. This is why in Zen Buddhism and Taoism, there are extensive training methods to try and make you natural again, which is really strange, right? I need to be natural again? Yes, you've had all this socialization, all of this indoctrination that has warped your nature, and you forgot the uncarved block, to use Lao Tzu's metaphor, of your own raw nature. Mm. And your own raw nature acts immediately and appropriately to each and every situation without hesitation. It's the hesitation which means that you have a logical train of thought. This logical train of thought is making you hesitate, and you can't approach life spontaneously, right? And so that's what this karmic principle is about. It's about approaching life spontaneously without hesitation. Mm. Krishna is saying to Arjuna, what are you even thinking about? This is your dharma. This is your duty. What is there to second guess? Oh, you're being moral because they're your cousins and that. Oh, I see. But this is your dharma.
Yes.
And your dharma is connected to the ultimate.
Yes.
To Brahman, to Vishnu, to Shiva, to Tao, whatever you like to use. It's connected to the ultimate. And your human, man-made moral perspective is eclipsing that.
Mm.
And so that doesn't mean we all go out and fight our cousins. The story is created extremely like that. So we kind of understand in a way of how important it is to follow our own personal dharma. And in following your dharma, you don't have a sense of guilt or shame, because you're not operating from a sense of morality. You're operating from what is needed in that immediate moment. And it's only through external systems pushing their own sense of morality onto you that you begin to cultivate this innate bad habit of feeling guilt or shame or embarrassed about just the life that you have, the natural life that you have.
Mm. Yeah, the guilt is actually, majority of the cases, artificial, because what we were told as to be moral and ethical is so strong, and we are so indoctrinated by that idea and concept.
Yeah.
So that when we do something against it because of your biological inclination and or like a sensory desires and things like that, so that you just act from that sort of desire. But if that was in conflict with the what's moral and what's ethical by external agency, then you're in conflict within yourself, right?
Yeah.
And then you feel guilty and you feel embarrassed to yourself and ashamed and this and that. But again, this kind of feeling is only there because we are conditioned by that kind of morality and ethics. Again, the external governance or principle, which is natural. Whereas what's natural guilt would be like when you act against your good nature.
Yes.
Right? That you harm somebody because you were angry or something like that.
Yes,
just
yes.
More like an impulsive reaction,
yes,
right?
Yes.
In that case, I shouldn't have done that, and this kind of feeling.
Yes.
That's more natural guilt, right?
Yeah.
In that case, that sort of feeling reminding you that your real nature is actually good, you see?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the other way around.
Mm.
But again, we associate guilt by, you know, external agencies, morality, which is, again, unnatural. So that I think it can only does harm to our own psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Because although you have your own sense of morality, intrinsic morality, but then what society tells you what's right and you're in conflict with that,
yes,
then you feel like a kind of guilty, but you know that's not entirely true. But you're in kind of dilemma, and then you lost a little bit like this. And if it goes deeper and deeper in that way, then you might have a bit of a psychological problem.
Like. Yes. we'll look at, as you said, with anger, like that impulsive behavior towards anger. So if you look at that, the impulse for anger or aggression, right, is based on the jiva. It's based on your conditioning.
Mm.
It's like, for example, in this day and age, you can say one thing to some person and then they can just completely delete you from their life, because especially in this day and age, people are building this identity which is based on external morality or what they think their morality is, and you know their morality is always the best. And so then that puts you in conflict with others and the world itself. Whereas if you hadn't gone through a strict process, you could say something to me and it would be like in one ear and out the other, there wouldn't be an impulse towards anger because you're not conditioned in that manner.
Yes.
So if you were just operating naturally in that sense, it would just be like maybe I would approach the situation in a more calm manner and there wouldn't be an impulse towards anger. Like you said, like that feeling of guilt, and that comes from going out of sync with what is natural to you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that's
and
right.
So like Mencius is saying that our nature is fundamentally good, but then it's when we do things that are against that natural inclination that we have, yes, that you feel bad.
Mm.
Now, I think that sort of idea was exaggerated through certain religions that went with a strict sin model, right? And so a sin model religion is still an external model. And that idea of sin is based on principles, based on whatever that religion thinks is right, right? And so I like what you brought up, because this is really nails down the concept of morality versus the natural world, where you've got these external systems saying, look, you're a sinner if you do this. And so what does sin often attack? It often attacks our natural inclinations. Why would they, like, why? And the reason, one of the reasons is you can keep people crazy in this way. Well, you can, right? Because yeah, you can make people go mad for their own natural inclinations. We are designed, for example, to procreate. That's what the code of this human being is. It's designed to perpetuate the species. And then there's nothing wrong with that too. Like, people are awesome and having babies is cool.
Mm.
But then you have these external systems that say, no, these natural inclinations you have are wrong. And you need to curb these natural inclinations, which then makes people go a bit crazy. For example, the philosophy of karma and also Taoism in this sense don't run a bump up against that. They say that you need to be human again. We've gone through this process of indoctrination where you need to actually become radically human. And that means not turning your natural inclinations into a sin. It means understanding them. And there's nothing wrong with engaging whatever that determined sin is, because it's natural. And it's actually, there's nothing, who determines whether it's right or wrong is up to the authority that is the external system, right? And so that's how guilt and shame and embarrassment and all that can be born, is that, hey, that guy's doing this, what an idiot, or even worse, when you start to condemn yourself.
It's kind of terrible. I think it's just harming a lot of people, because like, in that sort of way, in the natural inclination of your biological sense, is that body is saying, like, you need to do something about this, right? So whether that's right or wrong, we'll put that aside. What's appropriate is to be maybe do something about it. Might be healthier option for you.
Exactly.
But then external system will tell you that's not good. Again, put it into good or bad framework, right? And that's bad. If you do this, you're doing sinful act and this and that. So that you are literally going crazy, and we've seen enough of that kind, right?
Exactly.
There's so many things happening around the world that proves that's not right. That's not natural.
No. Yeah, because like you've got the external system telling you that this is wrong. But then you're engaging in it and you feel relief or good from whatever that may be, that natural inclination. And then, but then the conflict is there because you've downloaded this indoctrination and it's saying bad, bad, bad. And you're going, but I feel all right, but oh, maybe it's wrong, you know. So
I'm going crazy.
You go crazy, right? And so if you don't have that external system, your impulse is just to do what is necessary in that moment.
Mm.
But the way that you understand karma, and this is going back to what I said earlier, this is probably how they came across the idea of sin, is that when you do an unnatural act, like you said, if you just hit someone for no reason, and then you walk away and you feel like, well, I don't feel right. Mm. No one has to tell you that that was wrong.
That's right.
It's already an internal knowing. Why did I even hit that guy?
That's a conscience.
It's conscience, see? And so they've conflated the idea of conscience with sin in a lot of these external systems.
Yes, yes.
And right. So we know internally, as Mencius was saying, whether something is positive or negative.
Mm.
I don't even like to use the words right or wrong, because right or wrong usually comes under the umbrella of morality. But your internal moral imperative understands whether that is good or bad.
Yes.
Right? I shouldn't have hit that guy. I feel like crap.
That's right.
You know, if I just went up and said hello, everyone's shanty, everyone moves on with their life, right? And so that kind of nails down sort of the guilt aspect of it, doesn't it?
Yes. Again, like you always move from your natural moral imperative so that your action is always appropriate and always spontaneous action, but it is appropriate at the same time.
Yes.
And that is almost a little bit like a karma yogic practice.
Yeah.
Again, the nishkam karma in Bhagavad Gita is not being attached to the fruit of your own action.
Mm.
That is coming from that your own moralistic, natural moralistic imperative, which is natural to us and which is intrinsic to us. We do not need to get told what's right or what's wrong. We know it, right?
Mm.
So from that kind of practice in along the way, that is the path to the moksha.
Exactly. Yeah. Dogs have their own sense of inner moralistic imperative, right? Like it's, if they do, we do. You know?
Yes.
So as you said, on the way to moksha. So again, like one of the main focuses in this conversation is about that if karma is a natural moral principle, and it is a natural principle.
Natural, yes.
Then what are we naturally moving towards? And so, again, you have to understand that karma comes from Sanatana Dharma, right? And Sanatana Dharma is the eternal natural law. Sanatana Dharma here is Hinduism, which, in the philosophies are Vedanta, Yoga, Nyaya. There's many, right? Two of the main ones, obviously, are Vedanta and Yoga. And the idea is that we are naturally moving towards liberation.
Yes.
In this life, actually. Mm. Some people will say liberation upon death, and okay, that can be possible if you understand the system. But if we look at it from this perspective, right, when people age, and you and I talk about this privately all the time, what happens when people age? They've done everything. They've accumulated wealth. They've had family. What next? And then you see a lot of people, particularly in the developed world, that will turn to religion.
Mm.
Because there's got to be something else, right? And this is actually, I think, a natural karmic response to the changing landscape of your own life, the changing biology of your own life. Things are not operating as the same. Your bowels are moving a bit strangely. Your bones are a bit stiffer. And so you're thinking, like, what else is there? There must be something else.
Mm.
The difference is, like, if you go to India, you're born with this inclination.
Yes.
You have this inclination. This is inculcated within you from birth.
Mm.
Whereas in the developed world, because we kind of live in more of an atheistic society, people start to ask the questions. And they ask the questions that are hard to solve, and they're the ones that, in most cases, science can't answer because it's kind of beyond the scope of logic.
Yeah,
and so karma itself is geared towards moksha, because even if you look at the Bhagavad Gita and Arjuna is moving without the sense of self, right? This is the whole idea. This is the concept of transcending karma.
Yeah,
because when you have completely abide in the Atman, the undifferentiated consciousness, which is one with Brahman, the ultimate reality, right? Then karma cannot touch you anymore. Because there's not a person acting. The person is still acting in the sense that we can witness them objectively, still doing things. But inwardly, they are not touched by the life that they're living. They know that this is just a function of the Tao.
Right.
The function of Brahman.
Mm.
It serves its purpose while it's alive.
Mm.
And then that's it.
Yes.
Once the game is done, it's done. You're food for worms.
Yes, yes.
And so that's the place we need to get to. The Jivan Mukta, as I mentioned earlier, is the jiva that has become liberated in this life. Mukta is from mukti, which is release, liberation, same as moksha.
Yeah.
And so the Jivan Mukta is you're liberated in this life.
Mm.
And so you've transcended karma.
Mm.
You are not touched by karma then.
Yeah, again, sense of a person who would exist in time and place. So that means there is a beginning and the end. And same as the concept of karma as well. The action is time-bound instrument.
Yep.
So, but when you go beyond the personhood, beyond the karma, then your action and your existence itself is pure as it comes from the ultimate. So you fully became one with the ultimate, the Atman, the Brahman.
Yep.
You are that, right?
Yep.
So that you will always, your action will be always pure, but also spontaneous because you have transcended the idea of person.
Yes. Because karma can only relate to the jiva. How could it relate to the ultimate reality? Ultimate reality is eternal. And it's ultimately the substratum of all of existence. It's immanent within everything, but it transcends it. And so how could karma have any effect to that?
Mm.
How could you accrue any karmic stock? It's impossible. Once you've realized the Atman and the Jiva has thinned out and thinned away and you're just operating as a limb of Brahman, then you could not accrue any karmic stock. It just could not happen. And that's how you actually transcend samsara, this idea of coming back life after life. And this is, you know, going back to what we were talking about, like with a lot of Buddhist practitioners, is that why are you not yearning for this ultimate level? Because all spiritual aspirants must yearn for the ultimate reality, the formless, the formless, the beginningless and endless eternal now. Why worry about if you're going to have a nice Lamborghini or a big house in a future life? Like, why does that matter? And what does that say about your own intentions and your own self-interest? Because the concept of the Eastern spiritual paths is about we're all going down that one river to the ultimate ocean. But some of us, you know, pull the boat up and we put a shop up and say, look, I'll move down the road a little bit. I don't want to get there too soon. You know, I'll get there eventually, maybe 1,000 lifetimes from now.
Yeah. Yeah, people like to postpone their awakening, right?
Yes.
But why don't you just do it now? You can do it now. But if you, like even saying that I'm going to make a good karma for myself and this is already postponing.
Exactly, exactly. So you're always postponing your enlightenment. You know, all the great teachers talked about that. So all we have to do is understand that karma is a principle, a natural principle that is for jivas. But ultimately, the idea is to thin that jiva so far out that all you're left with is liberation. And then there's no reason then, well, you won't be coming back into another form because it's only jivas that come back life after life. So that's what we wanted to talk to you guys about today. You need to hone in on that idea that karma is a natural principle.
Yes.
It's not based on morality. And even if you think it is, you need to question your own motivations about whether your morality is better than someone else's, because each morality changes according to religion, according to places on the planet. There is no sort of ultimate sense of morality outside the sense that we have an internal moral imperative, which is determined by the natural law of karma. So guys, we hope you enjoyed and we'll see you guys next time.